Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Kansas Republican Jerry Moran, who joins us to discuss the upcoming farm bill, the debt ceiling, and the drought in his home state. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Supreme Court came down on the side of California in a case closely watched by many in farm country. The High Court affirmed the Ninth Circuit in its Prop 12 decision, which set animal housing standards for pork and other animal products sold in the state. The National Pork Producers Council and American Farm Bureau Federation challenged the rule, arguing it violated the Constitution's Dormant Commerce Clause. In the split opinion, Justice Neil Gorsuch wrote that while the Constitution addresses many weighty issues, the type of pork chops California merchants may sell is not on that list. Grocery prices are down for the second month in a row. The latest Consumer Price Index says dairy and related prices fell by 0.7%, egg prices fell by 1.5%, and consumers paid 0.5% less for citrus, potatoes, and tomatoes. The overall CPI rose by 0.4%. Prices rose for shelter, motor vehicles, and gasoline. And finally, the White House is upping its outreach to Capitol Hill on a pair of issues key to farm policy. President Joe Biden hosted congressional leaders this week to talk through options to avoid hitting the federal government's debt ceiling. The White House also played host to a meeting with the leaders of the House and Senate Ag Committees to discuss the upcoming farm bill. The sudden burst in activity comes as time is running out on both the debt ceiling and farm bill front. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says the nation will exhaust its borrowing authority in early June, and there's no sign of legislation to update the current farm bill before the end of September. Kansas Republican Jerry Moran says it's time for all sides of the debates to make some progress.
I'm sorry it's so late in the process. I wish this was behind us, but it is a good thing that the administration is engaged. As I say, it took them a long time to do so, but there are, you know, more than one party here who's going to make decisions about the direction we go in regard to increasing the debt ceiling and the levels of spending. I'm an appropriator, Senate Appropriations Committee. I've been the Ag Subcommittee Chairman on Appropriations, still serve on that committee, and we need top line numbers. These things are related. We have to know what the overall outcome of the debt ceiling debate is, what's the agreement, so then we can write appropriation bills to those numbers. And so there's a consequence. It's a really good thing that the conversations are finally taking place. And the hope is, although I say you have to be somewhat skeptical that anything around here happens quickly, the sooner there can be resolution of this, the better we're going to be in taking care of agriculture and the farmers and ranchers, but the nature of our government, keeping things with some certainty.
Mm-hmm. You were signed on to a letter amongst many of your Senate Republican colleagues earlier this week calling for spending cuts to go along with a debt ceiling deal. So I wonder, what do you think, what kind of cuts do you think are needed?
So, I mean, the reality is that we can't significantly make a dent in the debt if we're only dealing with the discretionary spending that we deal with on an annual appropriation bill, if we're only dealing with the decisions we make in a farm bill. I mean, the increasing costs for government in significant proportion relates to things that are called mandatory programs like Social Security, Medicare, and we don't have to make changes, dramatic changes now. We just need to put ourselves on a different path. And I was, you know, there's agriculture, my farmers and ranchers in Kansas and across the country, they have a lot at stake in this debate. And you would think, well, they have a lot at stake because it may have a consequence on how much money is spent in a farm bill. But our farmers are the victims of inflation. And the inflation comes from spending way too much money compared to the amount of money we take in. And so there's too many dollars chasing too few goods. Prices rise. And we see what that does to fertilizer prices, to the input costs of fuel and natural gas, diesel fuel, and certainly all the other components, farm equipment. So we need to have a path that is not just looking the other way every time a debt ceiling issue arises. It puts us in a different frame of mind that we're not going to continue this overspending time and time again.
You mentioned mandatory programs. Agriculture has mandatory programs as well, and some of those programs subject to, you know, living with the Budget Control Act of 2011, you know, issues. But I wonder, could the ag industry withstand some of the cuts that are being proposed by some of the folks in this debate?
Well, I mean, it all depends. It's in the details. And we have a strong, in the agriculture community in Washington, D.C., while we're still a minority, we're pretty effective. And Republicans in particular are going to want to reach an agreement that is not harmful to agriculture, I hope for the right reasons, which would be that we want to take care and make sure that we can feed ourselves and feed the world. But in addition to that, there's a political component of, in ag country, Republicans cannot afford to be seen as not caring about their farmers and ranchers and the communities that those farmers and ranchers live in and serve.
We'll be right back with more from Senator Moran right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Kansas Republican Jerry Moran says even though it's difficult to discern public progress toward a full five-year farm bill, he says he doesn't want to see talk of an extension just yet.
I would not go down the path of an extension at this point. It takes the heat, the pressure off of Congress to do its job in a timely fashion. We need a farm bill now, I mean, sooner rather than later. That new farm bill needs to be based upon the increasing costs of inputs, the changing markets and global circumstances, the circumstance that millions of people, 43 million people, are fragile in their hunger needs and their food needs around the globe. This is not something we should postpone too early, way too early in my view. And I still think, in addition to not wanting to eliminate the pressure, a farm bill can still be done this year.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the farm bill, its existing safety net, in the context of something that's happening in your home state. A lot of producers dealing with very, very dry conditions in your neck of the woods. And I wonder, when you look at the farm bill, when you look at the appropriations process that's upcoming, do you think producers in your state are going to need some kind of additional supplemental help to help them weather this drought, or will the existing farm safety net be sufficient?
This really is the most challenging period of time that I've seen in my time in Congress in Kansas and across much of the High Plains. So drought is real. It has, it's a financial challenge. It reminds us of why crop insurance remains the number one priority of my constituents, my farmers, when it comes to making what's important to them included in the Farm Bill. There are ways the Farm Bill can deal with this. It would be nice if we got the ad hoc assistance that we've had for markets and for weather, if we could get that incorporated into a program that's ongoing. But in the absence of that, if it doesn't happen, then I think those of us who worry about the future of rural America and the people that rural America feeds, then we'll be advocating for additional assistance.
Mm-hmm. I want to wrap up our conversation talking about something coming up in Kansas, in Manhattan, actually, the opening of the National BioAgro Defense Facility. For those that maybe aren't as familiar with NBAB, what can you tell us about what exactly the opening of that facility means for American agriculture?
Well, this is a project now. It started out as being constructed by the Department of Homeland Security. The handoff has occurred. It's now a USDA research laboratory. It is the replacement, soon to be the replacement, of Plum Island, off the coastline of the city of New York, where some of the most serious and challenging research is done in order to protect the food supply of our country and really the world. A commission that was created out of 9/11, the consequences of 9/11, a commission decided that our food supply, either intentional or unintentional, although they were looking mostly at terrorist activity that might in, intrude upon the safety and of our particularly our animal industry, but all of our food supply, and concluded that we were woefully inadequate in providing the necessary tools for us to protect ourselves. And so in Bath, as a result, nationwide competition for the location. Kansas was successful, and this is, you know, a 10-year ago project now coming to fruition. Secretary Vilsack will join me and others in Manhattan, Kansas later this month to cut the ribbon. He was there, I think 10 years ago, at least 8, 9 years ago, in which we broke ground. And so along, as a secretary of a different administration. So it is finally coming together. From a, you know, a Kansas point of view, it's really the benefits that accrue to agriculture, the safety of our country, those things. But it employs nearly 400 people, and it is one of the things I would say that in the Farm Bill that we didn't talk about, we cannot forget to focus on research to increase our efficiency, reduce the consequences of pests and other circumstances that farmers face. This is a kind of research that protects all Americans.
Senator Moran, for now, thanks for joining us.
In the meanwhile, we'll stay tuned and we'll watch and we'll learn from you.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Lydia Johnson takes a look at an interesting part of the Farm Program Dialogue in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Many farmers across the country are missing out on a big part of the Farm Bill safety net. The legislation's commodity programs are tied to historic production through so-called base acres. Since the 2002 Farm Bill, payments have been tied to the crops farmers grew from 1998 through 2001. Some growers updated their base acreage voluntarily through the 2014 Farm Bill. This chart shows the number of base acres enrolled in farm commodity programs versus each crop's acreage in 2022. The actual figure also includes acres farmers couldn't plant due to weather and other issues. In theory, using base acres keeps farmers from thinking about which crop might offer a bigger agriculture risk coverage or price loss coverage payment. As you can see, USDA's figures show soybean acreage exceeded its base by more than 34 million acres last year. Corn acreage is fairly close to its base, but wheat acreage is below it. Our Philip Brasher digs into the issue and the attention it is getting on Capitol Hill and among major farm groups in his coverage on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales, you're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you, that's who, as your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward, moving you forward.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Excited to be joined by this week's panel to converse about the debt ceiling, the Farm Bill, and everything in between. Joined this week by Chandler Gould with the National Association of Wheat Growers, as well as Chelsea Good with the Livestock Marketing Association. I appreciate both of you taking the time to join us. And Chandler, I want to go to you first, because we look right now at so much of the conversation in Washington relating to the debt ceiling and the discussions around that. We see so much discussion about the Farm Bill as well. And really, those two issues both kind of being handled on a behind-the-scenes basis at this point. But I do wonder, the debt ceiling, we see so many groups, NOG included, pushing for increased support in this upcoming Farm Bill, increased reference prices, and other things that are going to cost money. But we also see debt ceiling debates and Republicans calling for spending cuts to go along with an increase to the debt ceiling. So keeping all of that in mind, do you think agricultural groups should be concerned about the prospects of their requests, which again are going to carry money with them headed into this next Farm Bill, and then also considering the spending cuts being called for in the debt ceiling debate?
Well, you're absolutely right, Spencer. I mean, the ability to write an effective Farm Bill that has programs that are fully funded is completely dependent on resolving the debt ceiling issue. If we were to default and go over, this is different than a reconciliation, which is an appropriation budget process that the Congress goes through. But if we go over the debt ceiling, all programs are cut. The U.S. government can only spend up to 75% of its expenditures in each program. That means all of our conservation programs, our Title I programs. And so it's definitely going to make or break the ability to write a farm bill if we do not resolve this debt ceiling issue this month.
Well, and speaking of the farm bill, I want to ask something that's maybe a little bit more specific to the wheat industry, but also broader on the across the realm of commodity programs, really. And that is the eligibility of some of those programs being tied to base acres rather than planted acres. But a discussion happening right now on Capitol Hill about whether or not to move toward the planted acres direction. I wonder, speaking specifically on the part of the wheat industry, what would a shift like that mean?
Well, if we were to move away from base acres, the wheat industry would actually lose base. There's a lot more wheat base out there than we're actually planting on. Moving to planted acres would make it more accurate to what we're actually doing, but then we would not be in compliance with the WTO. So NOG is not supporting a base acre update, moving our programs based on the planted acres so that we don't, again, end up with some type of WTO cotton case based on that eligibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Chelsea, bringing you into the fold here, because we hear so often that lawmakers will ask agricultural groups, hey, be united and come to Capitol Hill with a unified request before you come to us and ask for specific farm bill language. And it's often joked by me and many others that agriculture is really good at producing circular firing squads, and the beef cattle industry has really good aim on that front. So I make that joke to ask, is the beef cattle industry going to be able to come to Capitol Hill with unified positions headed into this farm bill?
I believe that there are certainly things that there is a uniform voice about, and that's mostly in the animal health space. We had some exciting programs in the last farm bill with the three-legged stool working on a vaccine bank and the National Animal Disease Preparedness Program. I think that those are really important projects that we've seen with ASF and some other unfortunate disease situations since then, that I think that the beef industry is going to be uniform in saying we need to continue to work on these efforts. We need to continue to prioritize these things. There's going to be other things, Spencer, though, I think that there isn't uniform voices on, and I think that that makes them a little less eligible to be consensus-based farm bill type priorities.
We'll be right back with more from this week's panel right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Over the last couple of months and years, lobbyists and organizations have been refining their Farm Bill priorities. You can add to that list Chelsea Good with the Livestock Marketing Association.
The livestock auctions in the United States want to be part of some of the solutions that we see in things like expanding meat packing capacity and providing more competition with new packers. Unfortunately, we're not allowed to play in that space at this moment due to some antiquated packers and stockyards restrictions. The A-plus Act in the House, H.R. 530, Senate Bill 813 would change that. We'd love to see that move forward as quick as possible. I've got livestock auction owners that want to invest in local and regional packing capacity. However, if that's something that doesn't move pre-farm bill, that's probably going to be our number one request.
I want to ask you something that's maybe shifting away from the Farm Bill a bit and more just kind of local farmer chat in your neck of the woods. Of course, LMA located outside the D.C. Beltway. So I'm, you know, one of those folks that doesn't leave D.C. a whole lot these days and wondering, you hear all the time about the drought conditions in Kansas and Oklahoma and frankly, a part of the world where there's a lot of beef cattle and a lot of livestock auctions and a lot of market activity as a result. For those that aren't there, for those that aren't seeing it on a regular basis, how is this drought impacting agriculture in that region?
Spencer, it's really tough. And, you know, being Kansas City based, regularly traveling throughout Kansas and Oklahoma, other regions, the drought conditions are absolutely affecting our producers. Our livestock auctions see that every day in just the number of cows that are being sold that wouldn't otherwise be marketed, but you just have producers that do not have the feed resources that they typically would in order to maintain their herds at the sizes that they have been. So it's really challenging. We've started to get some rain, at least in Western Kansas over the last week or two, that is starting to be helpful, but it's a really challenging situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Chandler, maybe shifting back to the Farm Bill with you here, and as we look at the fact that we're seeing some of these ongoing dialogues on debt ceiling, on the Farm Bill, but in terms of Farm Bill action, here we sit in, you know, early May, haven't seen a markup in either chamber, haven't seen legislative text from either chamber. I wonder, is it about time or are we getting close to the time frame when agricultural groups might need to shift their expectations for the possibility of a Farm Bill yet this year?
It most definitely is. You know, the Senate has completed their oversight hearings and is moving forward with drafting legislation. The House Ag Committee just opened a portal for all House members to send in their Farm Bill priorities. So I know that the Four Corners have still got this deadline of trying to meet September 30th. But, you know, within the past week, we're now hearing possibly end of the year, December. But we're not hearing an extension into next year. But really, everything is being held up right now because of the debt ceiling, and it's taking all of the oxygen out of Washington, D.C., and so we're kind of on the pause button right now to see, A, what kind of money we're going to have to write the Farm Bill, and then, B, both committees have already started to draft. So I think they're on a very good timeline to have something at least by the end of the calendar year.
So often the last couple of years we've been saying the upcoming 2023 Farm Bill, will that or will that not be the case? I suppose we'll have to stay tuned to find out. But Chelsea Chandler, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, our Lydia Johnson takes a look at a key part of the Farm Bill in this week's Farm Bill Focus.
Title 8 in the Farm Bill focuses on forestry. According to the Congressional Research Service, one-third of land in the United States is forest land. Most of that is privately owned, but the federal government still has about 238 million acres of forest land. The Forest Service is the main federal forest management agency and is responsible for things like maintaining part of the country's forest lands and administering forestry assistance programs. Many of the Forest Service land management, assistance, and research programs receive appropriations annually through the discretionary funding process we described last week. The 2018 Farm Bill extended good neighbor authority to American Indian tribes and county governments, which allows more forest management services on that land. The bill also focused on mitigating cross-boundary wildfires by funding projects to reduce hazardous fuel loads. Aside from this title, you can also see forestry provisions in other parts of the Farm Bill, including the conservation and research titles we've already discussed, and the energy and miscellaneous titles we'll cover later in this series. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issues Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. The summit takes place on June 5th at the Sheraton Grand Sacramento and through our virtual experience. View the latest information and register today under the events tab at agripulse.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Typically, at this part of the program, we'd be telling you about the events that we're going to be following next week. But now, instead, we're taking some time to thank Lydia Johnson for joining us these last couple of months for her internship. Lydia, we hope you enjoyed your time with us.
Oh, thank you, Spencer. It's been a wonderful experience being part of the Newsmakers program and all the editorial content. And I so appreciate all the time that you and everyone else on the team has poured in to make it such a wonderful experience.
Well, I think I can speak on behalf of the whole team when I say it's been wonderful having you on board as well. And best of luck in your next steps in your career. It's going to be exciting to watch what those will be. And it's going to be exciting to have all of you back on the next couple of episodes of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Please continue to join us. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit agripulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.